Good morning, Kauai. Nalio Hawaiianish is coming right up.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right. Nalio Hawaiian Issues is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kava Kauai and Tahiti Nui Luau.
Kava Kauai is pleased to support Nalio Hawaiian Issues, a family-operated business serving traditional kava on Kauai for over 15 years. Available at Harvest Market, Healthy Hut, Papayas, and Hoku Whole Foods. More information at 1-800-626-0883 or online at realkava.com. Kava, the drink of peace.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Stay tuned for Nalio Hawaiian Issues.
The Hawaiians out there, all the people living in Hawaii, aloha mākou ia ʻoukou pakahia pau.
The Hawaiian Music Calendar is supported by HawaiianMusicStore.com. Mahalo, HawaiianMusicStore.com, for your support.
Aloha kakahia kakako. Welcome to our Hawaiian Music Calendar for Saturdays. The Tiki and Niki Restaurant on the North Shore and Princeville Shopping Center presents Cam from 6 to 8. The Tahiti Nui Restaurant in Hanalei features Keola Yokataki from 6 to 9. A traditional Hawaiian slack key and ukulele music concert featuring Doug and Sandy McMaster is at the Princeville Community Center across from the library at 6. On the South Shore, Leilani Rivera Lo and Halau Hula O Leilani are at the Grand Hyatt in Po'epu from 6 to 9. Keoki's Paradise in the Po'epu Shopping Center presents Kyle LeBenz from 5 to 7 and Kahalau at 8. And Merriman's Fish House in the Kukui'ula Shopping Center in Po'epu features Kirby Keo on the front Lanai Mall from 6 to 8. On the east side, there's a free hula show featuring Leilani Rivera Lo and Halau Hula O Leilani at the Coconut Marketplace Shopping Center at 1. The Hukilau Lanai at the Kauai Coast Resort in Waipoli presents Billy Paul from 6 to 9. Shedder's Lounge at the Kauai Beach Resort presents Jonah Cummings from 7 to 10. And the Courtyard Kauai Marriott Resort at Waipoli features John Planus from 6:30 to 8:30. Larry Rivera is featured at the Kauai Museum in Lihue from 1 to 2 with talk story and music. And the Lava Lava Beach Club at the Kauai Shores Hotel in Kapa'a features Sean Pulava and Wes Pekanis from 5 to 9. On our west side, the Wrangler Steakhouse in Waimea presents Nick Costello from 6 to 8. If you have Hawaiian music events you'd like posted on our Hawaiian music calendar, please fax it at least 1 week before the event to 826-7977 or email it to events at kkcr.org. Attention, Linda. Mahalo Nui Loa. Have a great Hawaiian day.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KQA Kilauea, K24AL Haleiwa. This is in Nalio Hawaiian Issues. Cousin Mahi is feeling under the weather, so aloha no to you, cousin. Feel better. Portuguese bean soup, bro. Portuguese bean soup. And even my Japanese auntie used to make the Portuguese bean soup, but she would make a Portuguese rice. Oh, my God. My Auntie Sarah in California, she had the... She got the recipe from my Rego, my grandmother Rego, who's pure Portuguese. And, boy, my Japanese auntie made it good. I wipe out the whole pot. The whole pot. It was delicious. Thank you for giving me that recipe, Andy. I gotta whip up some. But this is not Leo Hine issue. So what's happening right now? Well, that thing with Mark Zuckerberg on his wall, it is legal. But I think it's stupid. A lot of other people do. A lot of people don't give a crap. it's just, you turn in now, now you're met with the wall of China. Great wall of China. I don't know how far he's gonna go. Again, the county said he can go all the way through Waipake, so it's possible. But if they're saying they're blocking the highway noise, then I would imagine it shouldn't go much further. But we shall see. We shall see. Controversy hit all over the world, though. Thanks for our friends Bob and Frederica again in Atlanta for sending the email where it shows Fox News picked it up, ABC News picked it up, United Kingdom all the way over there, even in Israel, India, and Canada, and with pictures. So, so a lot of people are pushing this. Again, I made a comment. I just wanted to let people know, especially the ABC one. It said that, you know, Zuckerberg's Hawaiian neighbors are complaining about it. It's like, well, you know, again, the identity of what is a Hawaiian. I know they take our country, they take our lands, and now they just want to take our identity. So I wrote a comment first with a lot of Americans, while you celebrate your Independence Day this coming week, this whole weekend, was that this whole controversy involves Hawaiian rights, because the wall is built on land that were owned by Hawaiian families. How to get taken away? Courts of the United States after we were taken over. But the, while the Americans celebrate their independence, when they mention the Hawaiian neighbors of Zuckerberg in this area, I had to clarify, say, well, what a lot of Americans don't understand is that Hawaiians is a race of people. You know, a lot of people want to say Kanaka Maoli, but Hawaiians was good enough for my queen. It's good enough for me to know where, just like when you say Japanese, when you think of Japan, where do Japanese people come from? They come from Japan. Okay, Hawaiian people come from Hawaii. It is a race of people. Okay, and I mentioned this before, but it's still being pushed and through the media. The majority of the world they know about Hawaii, but they don't know about Hawaiians. Okay, they think, you know, so when you look and the people who were being quoted in the paper, Garden Island and around the world, I saw one guy named Moku, but the guys who I see being quoted, I don't know Moku, whether just because he has a name, because a lot of people just have Hawaiian names now and they're not Hawaiian. I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about that. It's just that you can't go by name if they have Hawaiian. But the majority of the people in there were not Hawaiian. So I made a comment on the ABC one, is that you're calling people Hawaiian who are not Hawaiian. You know, it's a race. Hawaiians are a race of people. And the people you are quoting are basically Americans, mostly. And they're, as I quoted, not as rich as Zuckerberg, but got more money than those Hawaiians, basically. And these are the same types that never came out to support me when they were building Waipake, when I was getting damaged, still get damaged, to this day get damaged, and which I had to go yesterday to plead my case before the county on why is my property tax keep on increasing when I got broken land. That's like increasing the tax on my car, but it got hit by someone else and I can't fix it, yet you keep on telling me, oh, it increases every year. So we've been able to work something out. I'm still not happy, but I've been able to bring them down a little bit. But it's still, my whole point with them is, how can you keep on increasing my taxes when my land is damaged? I don't have water. I don't have the lo'i anymore. I don't have taro. It's all been destroyed. So, you know, and the same old thing. It's even the county Public Works Director at the time, Kyoji Masaki, sent it in. So it's, you know, I've got, and that's why sometimes I burn out with this. I went to the Planning Commission. I went to the County Council. I went to the mayor. I went to, and this is over a span of 25 years, I went to all the different mayors. First, Joanne Yukimura, who found, we found out her husband was, you know, actually putting in the infrastructure in Waipake. So that's why, oh, no wonder you didn't give a crap about us for all these years. But whatever I'm into, whenever we have a phone call, that takes priority. So I am going straight to the phone call, see if they want to get on air. Hello, caller with Nale Hawaiian Issues. This is, Naokana. You got something to say about Hawaiian issues or anything you got to say? If you're there. Oh, never mind. Oh, there you are. Hello, how you doing?
It's Leslie. How are you?
Hey, Kay, I gotcha.
Hey. I was listening to you.
Uh-oh.
I just wanted to share something
sure.
with all the smart turnips that are in the truck. There's a guy by the name of David Wynn Miller,
mm-hmm.
and he has a YouTube video that's about 6 hours long. And about the first hour, you're going to be scratching your head, and then you're not going to be able to put it down. Because, you know, the Hawaiian language wasn't allowed to be spoken because it was one of the purest languages, and all the rest of them have since been bastardized. And until you realize what's going on, you're going to keep going around and around and around because nobody has been taught grammar correctly. So I'm just handing that out there. Anybody that wants to take a look can. David Wynn Miller, W-Y-N-N.
Uh-huh.
That is going to give you more aha moments, and he's already done the work. You will, it will totally blow anybody's mind that's willing to pay attention to that video. It was done in May. It's about 6 hours long. It should come right up at the top on YouTube.
And it goes over so what?
Pardon?
And you just look up his name and his subject matters.
Go on YouTube and look up David Wynn Miller, mm-hmm. W-Y-N-N. There's actually a hyphen between David and Wynn.
Okay.
But there's a video on there that's about 6 hours long. It was done just in May of this year. And there's tons of them on there. But give yourself an opportunity just to listen to that. It will change everything for anyone who's willing to do that. And that's all that's my $1 million gift that I'm offering you today.
And I'm going to take it.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. Yeah, I'm going to check it out. I mean, that's the other reason why I like, you know, hey, look, I'm very passionate about my land up in Waipaki, and I'll die for that land, protecting it. But I think I'm a big enough a man where if I hold a belief or I hold something saying that it's true and the evidence provides that's provided to me, it shows that I'm wrong. I don't think there's anything to adjust your opinion when you're confronted with facts that show that you're wrong. Say that you're wrong. And I would do that. And I like to talk to people like her. I never heard of this guy. But I'll check it out. I might not like it. I might like it. I don't know, but I'll check it out. That's what you talk to people. You learn from people. You take in their opinions. And, that's why when, you know, I know me and cousin and other Hawaiians, we do this. It's, you know, the America, the United States, and we bunch it all together, but we do acknowledge and we have to acknowledge that there are many Americans who support Hawaiians and our cause. And I'm one of them because I'm part American. I was born in California. I was raised with all this stuff. And when I came here and learned what happened, I can't back America with that. I support Hawaiians. They were wrong. Clearly. Clearly. Indisputable. And we have another caller, so we're going to put them straight on the air. Hello, caller. You are on there with Nale Hawaiian Issues.
Hi. Aloha.
Aloha.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that friend who just called in.
Sure.
I had a friend who was in Kalalau, and he got – oh, sorry. I'm trying to turn my radio off here. Yeah. Okay. He got those tickets that says, like, wait, you don't have a reason to be here. Like, where's your paper? You need to have a paper to be here. And
permit.
He got turned on to this man that the lady just called in about.
Uh-huh.
And he went in there, and he actually has the court in there on record agreeing to that they're committing perjury because of the wording. So it is really powerful. And thank you so much for your beautiful show. And
wow.
Speaking of wording, last week, a lady, might have been that same lady, or maybe a different lady had called in, and she was, you know, talking about peace on the planet, and like all these beautiful visions, and Hawaii being a free nation, and all nations being free. But then she'd always close it back with like, but it can't really happen because of the money, and we know they're in control of the money. But I just want to call in and say it can happen, and we can make it happen, and thank you for your show. It's a part of making it happen.
Mahalo.
So, mahalo.
And that's what we try to do, and obviously these people had, they knew our number, which is 822. Which is not 826-7774 or 826-7771. Mahalo, because you share and help give me knowledge. Like, I never heard of David Wynn Miller, so I'm going to check it out. And, you know, like I was saying, there are many Americans who support the Hawaiian cause. Like I said, I was born in California, and, you know, very staunch, man. I was ready to go to military school, everything. I was American, USA, yeah, Russians, bad people, you know. Then when I came down here and I realized the history, I didn't listen to what people said. I actually looked at the history books. And it was my Haole teacher, even though I went to Kamehameha. At that time, for me and my other friends, we were Americanized. You know, like I told you before, we had George Helm come up. And I know some of my other friends got it. But me and my friends, most of us were in this mode of, hey, we got an Eagles concert tonight. Yeah. It didn't, at least for me, hit. I don't know. I can't speak for anyone else in my class. My close friends, I know we were in the same mindset. It hit me later what George Helm was trying to tell us at Kamehameha. It hit me later, but it did hit me. I just have to apologize to his spirit that didn't hit me when I was face to face to him. I had to learn it when I actually got the chance to go Koholawe. And that's when my whole life turned around. When I saw that island, when I had the rain fall on me, when we were told there was no rain on Koholawe, which is right next to Maui, which is Haleakala. The rain comes straight over Haleakala, right over to Koholawe. But they destroyed the artesian wells, except for one. We're still digging up. I think they still use it. But George Helm said his father was sent there to destroy four of the wells because they thought Koholawe was a possible... United States thought it was a possible landing island where they could set a base. So he was there to destroy. But he could not destroy, George Helm's father could not destroy the last artesian well. And we saw it there when we went to Koholawe. And to feel that mana, and at that time in the early 80s, even sovereignty, no one was really talking about sovereignty. It was just starting off small to even go against the United States Navy at that time who had control of Koholawe. That was a big step. And it took brave Hawaiian men and women to do that. George Helm, Kimo Mitchell, all the kupunas who supported them, Emmett Lully, Walter Riddy, who's still alive. You know, that started the ball for me. And then when Oa comes up and all that. So I think if you have an objective mind, you look at the facts, you cannot help but support Hawaiian's rights and sovereignty. Because it's the right thing to do. And sadly, again, we have these, as a Bangladesh prime minister announced, misguided Muslim. Even he pronounced Bangladesh is a religion of peace. And he said, we have to try to find out why these people are being misguided to do these kind of things, but it's not Islam. And I back those statements up. I've read not all the Quran, but I've read briefs because I'm interested on, okay, people say it's this and that. Hey, in the Quran, Muhammad is praising Jesus. He's not putting down Jesus or against Jesus. He's actually praising Christianity. I think one of the main differences was that Muhammad didn't believe that he should be idolized. You know, and that's where the Muslim believes, and you don't depict Muhammad, you don't make, you know, little statues of, you know, like Christianity has Jesus. It's just they don't believe in that. It was leaning towards idolism, but it's funny because they both come from the father of Abraham. Right? They're brothers. Muslim and Christians are brothers. But we've seen it all around the world, and, as the other callers have said, and I know, as we all know, there are crazy people out there doing stupid and crazy thing because you crazy. Okay? Thank God the majority of us, even Hawaiians who are fighting for our sovereignty, man, we ain't shooting people and we ain't bombing. Come on now. You just off, brah. You just off. So I support those and all of us who have the consciences of minds that that's not the way to go, brothers. Okay, as I said before, you're not going to gain people's support by killing them. But in the same token, I noticed that, like the Zuckerberg thing, where they're talking about this land, these lands were taken from Hawaiians. Now, I know I get this all the time when people call or I talk to non-Hawaiians. They're always, well, we didn't take it from you. Yeah, you didn't, but you get to buy it. You still end up with land that's stolen from a Hawaiian family. And I mean stolen, people. I mean legal stealing. I mean, just so you got to read some of these cases. The biggest crooks. So that's why when you talk to Hawaiian families, it's different from when you talk to people who have lived here. Because most of the people, like the Japanese and most of the houses, you had some. But most of the people here never got land from King Kamehameha III. It was mostly Hawaiians. And those are the lands that are being attacked continually. Our institutions, like Kamehameha schools, attacked continually. When we had our own nation, this was legal. So Zuckerberg's land, the Pila'a land, and Waipake was my family from the Great Mahele. I'm not trying to make a taran-taran. I'm just telling you the facts. That Waipake Apua was given to my family. Pila'a, I don't know the exact family, but we had families over there too. The Lovells, the Huddies, were all in that area. My family was a Trask. All those lands belong to Hawaiians. And how did Zuckerberg got it? Zuckerberg didn't take it from my family. But he gets to buy it because it was taken from my family. See what I mean? So this argument that we didn't do it, it doesn't sit well with me because you still get to buy it. You're buying stolen land. And yeah, really, who else can buy $100 million? I heard it was like, Waipake was like 66 mil. So great. If you walk along Ko'olau Road, now at least that small part, and we don't know how long it'll go, but Pila'a, walk on the other side. Don't walk by the wall side because you're going to be walking hot. It's over my head. So, another phone call coming in. Hello, caller. You're on the air with Nalea Hawaiian Issues.
Hi, great. Hey. It's me again. So I have a question for you.
Sure. What?
So I've been listening, you know, and I'm really tuning in. I'm a transplant from Washington State over here. Love Kauai so much and really believe in freedom for all nations. So, you know, I do think the statement is true that the U.S. isn't going to just give up Kauai. Like, okay, we know that's true.
Yeah.
But under international law, my understanding is that y'all have done all the work needed to do, that the international law, you know, very easily shows that what was done to Queen Liliuokalani was illegal, and it was a legal overthrow. So I also know there's a lot of people, like here, this is folks on Kauai, all of Hawaii, but here on Kauai, like I know there's a lot of people on Kauai who are all about sovereignty and free nation and everything. So how does it come to be that, like, how do you get all the people together and just say, we are not under your U.S. government anymore, we're not paying your taxes, we're not paying your taxis, we are doing something different? Like, how do you do that?
That's been the golden question for the past 20-25 years when sovereignty took place. We've broken up. Basically, how I see it, we were in separate kingdoms back in the day. Kamehameha united us. Controversial, yes, some families were, you know, they're, you know, Hawaiians were fighting Hawaiians. And he united the islands. Now, after the overthrow, we've been broken apart. You know, there's from the 1900s, really not until the 20s, because Hawaiians were still fighting for it. After the 20s, you could see there was like a lull, like they're like, God, we can't do anything against this United States. Then you have that coming up in the 70s where everyone thought, God, this guy is crazy to fight Ko'olawe, but they won. And that kind of set the groundwork in the 70s that, hey, we can challenge them. Now in the 80s, it got a little bigger. 90s, definitely sovereignty started to take off. But the problem is, like many agreed, and it's been mentioned at the DOI meetings 2 years ago, we have unlimited amount of leaders going in all different directions. The big question is, how do we get them together? There was inklings when the Kakabu was trying to get through a couple of years ago when all the different groups got together and signed basically a new Kuei petition. And there's a movement now, not necessarily of the sovereignty groups, but a roots that we played last week with Ku Kahakalau and my Trask cousins, Mililani and the son Lakea. Or not the son, the cousin, who they were talking about. There's a roots
grassroots, which they're going through the community and they're bringing workshops to all the islands, saying that the organize the people first, then we worry about the po'o. The po'o is ahead. And that's where they said the same thing. We have all these po'os, but who's supporting these po'os? And those who are supporting, we're all in separate groups. So that has been the golden question. We've always, or at least I have and others have advocated, there has to be some kind of meeting with our leaders of our group. And my idea was make it political parties. Right now, as it stands, reinstated versus, Kanaʻapuni, not Naʻapuni, I don't leave those out of the picture, but other sovereignty groups is that they all believe they're separate entities. Mm-hmm. So how would you incorporate, you know, if they want to call themselves Atu'i, supposed to be Atawai, and you reinstate it, and you have Paukaukau, and you have, you know, Kalahui. The only way I could see is that our leaders have to first come together, and then they say, okay, just like the Americans did, we all have different ideas, but we are one. And to incorporate all those dears, we all sign some kind of declaration that says we are political parties of the Hawaiian nation. Then you can have differences of opinion, yet, you know, just like the Americans, Democrats and Republicans, but when they're attacked, boom, Democrats and Republicans become Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the people, at least this new push too, is trying to get our leaders to do that, that we know we have to organize. We've been lied to our face again. Right to our face by the Department of Interior. Now, to me, I used to have respect for the Department of Interior. You think, you know, you're growing up to think that government is supposed to make things fair. You can, you know, you can trust them, judges and courts, but especially, and I know it happens all over the world, but specifically because I'm looking at Hawaiian cases, looking at Hawaiian land cases, you would be shocked to see what was done legally in this system.
Right. So, Uncle, this is the thing. I've been, like, for years, you guys, I mean, I remember, because, so we were off island for a year, now we're back, but I remember you talking about this, that all the leaders need to come together. We all need to, so, like, this is a great conversation. And then, like, that's right. That's the golden question, because how do we make it happen? Like, it just needs to happen.
Yeah. So, you know, there are workings, and, you know, we did see all our people, the majority, the vast majority, support independence through the DOI meeting, and it was brought up then. We have to, now our problem is, Hawaiians have to organize as a block, not as Atuai on this side and reinstate on this end and the other guys on that. No, it has to come in as a block. Then politically, someone will listen to us. But as separate, divided, what's the old saying? Divided, you're going to fall.
Okay, so I believe a lot in the power of prayer. So I'm just going to keep praying for the togetherness to happen. And yeah, thank you so much.
No, and I believe in prayer too. I have to tell you, and I'll admit it, my faith has wavered, but my wife, you know, she keeps that. And prayer, to me, is also like quantum physics. You can change things if you just put out that positiveness. And the more of us who do it, these crazy people will push on the side, our rights will be fulfilled, and it'll be a happier life because everyone's being treated fairly and justly. And that's always been our goal as humans.
Yes.
Humans.
Yes, well, mahalo, mahalo.
Aloha, no.
Aloha.
Mahalo. Thanks for the phone calls. And, you know, because I going through this taxation and fighting for my land up there and all this other stuff happening, I had to mention that, especially when these articles on Zuckerberg's wall, they're calling people who are not Hawaiians because the world, you know, everyone here is Hawaiian and Hawaiian. No, not really. And that's what I was trying to explain to some people who I was with playing music for is like, you know, you have locals, and locals know they're not Hawaiians, but they don't feel like they're not Hawaiians because locals means you accept it and you're in with us. You do things like us. That's why you locals. Okay? Another phone call before we go to the top of the air. Hello, caller. You're on air with Nale Hawaiian Issues.
Aloha.
Aloha. You're on the air.
Beautiful. Hi, Jim. Thanks for your beautiful show. I'm the person that the last caller was talking about with the case in the courthouse. And I figured I'd give you a call back to just let you guys know what happened there of having the DLNR officer on the witness stand admitting to perjury.
Really?
Yes. And that was the case about Kalalau. Now, what I generally do, I'm a postmaster and a captain of a vessel, as well as a linguist, where I make sure that the communications that come in and out of my vessel are correct. I'm with no contract with any particular incorporate entities, whether that be Walmart or United States or Canada or Europe. We just navigate through the space and the oceans and the seas and the land as a sovereign entity of its own, which is a vessel, and moving to make sure that the communications are correct and the contracts that are formed are correct. Now, as we move forward, we come in contact with different entities, different beings, and they call them human beings. But the means of communication and the business that we're in is exchange of words. Now, if you look at around yourself, you see that, open your wallet. You got pieces of paper in there with words written on them, signatures at the bottom of them, maybe a number attached to it on the side, which generally you call money. And that is considered to be a means of communication, somebody's word and contract. Now, the validity and the honor of that contract allows other people to, based on that contract, create contracts of their own. For example, I say, well, would you come and fix my car or my ship? And then you say, sure. We both trust in that contract, so then we exchange a print of that contract in the honor that your words and my words are correct. Mm-hmm. Now, all of that depends on the fact that the structure of the sentences, the structure of the words, the meanings of the words, all of that needs to be in checks and balances, which means I have to agree upon what the words you mean to me, as well as what you have to agree, what the words you mean, what I say, mean to you. And once we form that contract, then we can move forward to communicate and talk. Now, what is taking place in courthouses and not in Hawaii, the issue is not a Hawaiian issue, the issue is not an American issue, the issue is a planetary issue, is that we've been educated in looking at words and sentence structures in one way, whereas anytime you come in contact with an authority or whoever is in charge with guns and clubs, they look at the words in another way. And with the use of that, they just ask you a few questions, like, do you agree that these words mean this way? And you say yes, so they move forward with their contracts. For example, they say, we are here to arrest you. And sometimes you get angry. You say, well, why do you want to arrest me? Because what they mean, you think they're going to take you away. But what they mean is a formation of a contract. The word rest is a contract. And you negate that contract with the putting of an A in front of it. In the same way you would create a word like asymmetrical out of the word symmetrical. In the way, same way you can create the word atheist out of the word theist. Follow. You can create the word arrest out of the word rest. So when they come to you, they say, we are here to perform a no contract with you. And you comply, or whoever, general public, not, when I say you, I don't mean you personally, but I'm saying general public, whoever we're listening here, we comply. And then we find ourselves in a situation when another human being is performing acts upon us and taking us in a situation where we have no contracts with them.
Okay, hold,
we give up that power.
Okay, now hold that thought for right now, because on the top of the hour, I'm going to do the quickie legal stuff, then I'll get right back at you. So hold on there. Hold on to the phone, okay?
Okay. All right.
Well, you're listening to Nali Hawaiian Issues, KKCR, Honolulu, KQ, Kilauea, and Nali Hawaiian Issues is made possible by callers and listeners like you in partnership with Kamoa Ukulele and KCC, Kauai Community College.
Kamoa Ukulele Company, dedicated to building high-quality bell-tone instruments, built with a one-player-at-a-time philosophy, from student models up to custom masterpieces. Kamoa Ukulele Company, a family-owned business, supports KKCR. 652-9999 or online at kamoaukulelecompany.com.
The Hawaiian Studies Program at Kauai Community College, offering courses and experiences in Hawaiian language and culture for the children and friends of Hawaii. 245-8202.
and mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. All right, we got the call on air. You have the, you're on air again, sir.
Thank you so much. Well, when I approached the court in this particular instance, it was much simpler. You know, I didn't have to dive into the whole structure of grammar. The piece of paper the DNL officer had given me on it had, as the charges, it's written, and this person has committed the offense of closed area. When I got there and I had to cross-examine the officer, I asked him a few simple questions. I said, sir, I lifted the piece of paper. I said, is this your communication to me? Did you give me this? He said, yes. I said, so you stand by these words as your communication? He said, yes. Then I said, with all due respect, do you understand the word syntax? He kind of looked at the judge and the prosecutor and me. He's like, no. Fair enough. Well, do you comprehend the word grammar? Kind of chuckled and said, yes. Then I said, well, do you understand the word par se? It's French for parts of the speech, which mean, different parts of each word. Do you understand that? He said, yes. Then I lifted the paper. I said, well, here I have a sentence in this mode of communication where it says, and this person committed the offense of closed area. But in this sentence, the word area is being used as a verb, modified by an adverb closed, saying it's an offense or an action that I have committed. Is that true? He answered yes. But so you understand that the adverb modifies the verb, kind of gives it a color, it kind of changes the state of it. He said yes. Then I asked him, I said, sir, does Kalalau Valley exist? Do you believe it exists? He answered, yes. I said, so its existence is a fact? He said, yes. I said, so that area is a fact? And he said, yes. I said, so this word area used here is a fact? He said, yes. I said, so you comprehend that you are modifying a fact with an adverb, changing it into a verb, saying it's something I have committed. He kind of looked at me, he's like, yes. Then I asked him, I said, sir, do you comprehend the word perjury? He said, yes. But do you comprehend that perjury is modifying, changing, or altering facts? He said, yes. Then I lifted the paper, I said, but then do you comprehend what you've written on this piece of paper, which you stand by as a communication, is officially perjury? Said, yes. On witness, as I have it on video.
Did you have a chain around his neck while you were doing this, while you were leading him down that road?
It's basically, when you speak the truth, there's nothing that can stop it. You see, the biggest massacre, the biggest betrayal of humanity is that the very modes of communication, the very words we're speaking with each other have been tampered with. So we lose the sight of every fact and turning it into a verb, which is an opinion.
Which is exactly what they do in the court. They mix it all up.
They mix it all up so their opinion would go forward as a fact. See, when you give me a medicine and it's bitter, I could take it as a violent action, right? That my interpretation or a child's interpretation, generally they don't like medicine. They're like, oh, that's bitter. Oh, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah, abuse.
And so you explain to them that, no, it's medicine and it's going to make you feel well. And so they're like, oh, okay. So you create a fact with them. You create a contract. And with that, then you can go forward with that being a medicine. But however, an action can be interpreted many different ways. So actions are no contracts. Actions are no facts. Actions are opinions. Therefore, verbs are opinions. And they make sure every fact, including the existence of Hawaii, including the existence of Kalalau, all of them are systematically in the sentence, are turned into a verb, so then now we can step into a realm of opinions as opposed to a realm of facts. Doesn't matter how much you go ahead and try to fight it, you are still fighting an illusion.
Right, and I understand because when I look at some of these cases I saw, especially when you see some video on them, it very is hanging on a word, whether it was said correctly, not said, how it was used, changes your whole case.
It completely does, because that's all that a case is. That's all that a claim is. A claim is a statement.
I tell you
what. A statement is a series of words.
I tell you what. You have, I have a little, my, my light bulb has gone in the back. I would like to, get, some information so we can contact each other. I know you probably don't want to do it on the over the air right now, but if you mind, I'm going to put you on hold and, get some information because I'd like to talk to you some more.
For sure. For
and
sure.
Then definitely call back. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on hold, and then I'm going to get to you, right to you, okay?
All right.
Thanks, caller. I find that fascinating, and I like linguistics. I like language. And, yeah, when you look at these court cases, oh, you didn't say this correctly, so you lost your case. Oh, man, or if someone doesn't say it right, it's kind of, how would I say, kind of gutless to really have a case because of a technicality or stuff, but how many times have we seen it? So I'm fascinated with this guy. I'll go over the case more, but I want to have some information and talk to him personally on wording and stuff. So, but we'll bring him back definitely. What I wanted to get into now was go directly into the DOI and Niall Puni and federal recognition, because that's the biggest issue Hawaiians have. Because that's once we sign off on that, there's no going back. Okay, this is the clincher. They do not have Hawaiians saying, okay, you can take our country. Nothing. They got nothing. That's why the DOI came to us and asked us, hey, please approve this plan that we got to put you under Indian Affairs, basically, like Indians we have on the mainland. And we totally rejected them. No. So you have to understand, not only are words important, how you say, especially in courts, how you communicate with people, but understanding what needs to be done, what has been done, and the facts behind it. So this is excerpts from First Friday episode on DOI, Department of Interior, Niall Puni, and the federal recognition.
What is a Jew? Hawaii.
But before we get to the main story, I wanted to ask you folks if you could share a little bit about yourself. Why don't you start here, Lania? Where are you from? Who are your family? What is your ohana? Because I think our listening audience needs to know that family background. And, of course, when you're an advocate, it's good to know where that attitude came from. It had to be in the blood, in the koko.
Yeah, aloha.
Welcome back to the First Friday Show.
Yeah, Helani. Thank you so much for having me. my name is Helani Sonora Pale. I am married to Shane Pale, who's from Molokai. And I was born and raised on Oahu. My family is originally from Kahana Valley. And my grandmother was born and raised there. And I also have roots on the Big Island. My father has been very active in the sovereignty movement for many, many years. And my mother has also been a very outspoken community leader. And I think that's where I got that from. I'm also, currently I live in Kuleo'o. And I have my undergraduate degree in Hawaiian studies, my master's in education. I was a student of Hanani K. Trask, and I think that has a lot to do with my politics, and I'm very proud that she was my kumu. And also, I was very involved in the 90s with Kalahui Hawaii, and I got a lot of my political training there as well. So I'm very happy that I did get that training and that opportunity to work with Kalahui back in the 90s. And I see a lot of our people, our citizens out there doing the work in the community too.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. Mm-hmm. How about yourself, Lehu? A little bit of your background and your education.
You know, I grew up in Waipahu. My parents still live in the house I grew up in. And, you know, my mom is originally from South Kona. My dad actually grew up in Halawa housing. So he experienced, you know, what it was like when they built the stadium, went to Radford High School. Had a really hard life, but they really wanted to give us every opportunity they never had. They never got to go to college. My mom went for a little bit, but never got to finish. And so, you know, that was a huge thing for them to give us those opportunities they never had. So graduated from Kamehameha Schools, like Keaulani Hawaiian Studies major. That's how we know each other. And I attended the William S. Richardson School of Law. And so You know, as Hialani said, my mentor too is Haunani K. Trask, yourself, Billy Lani, you know, doing all the work in Kalahui back in the 90s. I think no matter where you go, if you're in education or if you're at the legislature, mm-hmm. that work and that becomes a part of who you are. And so just excited to be here and to share with the community some of the things that has been going on that will have an impact upon.
You know, I think this is an important show for all of us because we're getting to the point with regards to Na'iaoponi, Kana'iolovalu, an effort that has dragged on for years. People aren't really sure where it's going. And then interfacing with it, suddenly there arises the Department of Interior.
I'll just stop that real briefly just to let you know. This is first Friday from 2 months ago, so just from April. Well, not three, but okay.
Rulemaking process. Right. And I thought it would be good to begin historically by going back to the rulemaking process mm-hmm. and to talk with you both about it. Mm-hmm. Your mana'o about where this DOI rulemaking process came from, a little bit of history for our viewers. I certainly was shocked to see it come out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I participated not only in giving some testimony at the Capitol, but coming back to the Big Island mm-hmm. where I live. But, you know, there's been quite a bit of discussion about how we even got into a situation, no one knew anything, and suddenly the Department of Interior is hosting a rulemaking procedure.
Right.
Where did it come from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and so what basically happened, as you know, was from 2000, the Akaka Bill was in Congress, and it failed. Even when we had senior senators there, it wasn't able to advance. And so, you know, late in the decade of 2000, it was looking like it was going to be a failure. They were looking at other avenues. So the first I know I heard of it was when Robin Danner had the ear of President Obama at an Asian American and Pacific Islander conference where she asked President Obama about him supporting a rulemaking process. And then thereafter, the next person I heard speak of it was Senator Schatz when he was recently elected to Congress. So that was when I first even heard of this process being considered. And it's interesting because even in 2014, when it came out, the press release came out on June 23rd. Less than a week later, they were already having public meetings. What kind of education, what kind of process where people could be mm-hmm. informed about what was going on, you know, not even a week later, they're holding meetings. But even with that, that's some of the information yeah. Helani's going to share is what was the outpouring that came, even with that short time frame and how our community responded mm-hmm. at those meetings like yourself.
Even with very little notice,
mm-hmm.
the Hawaiian community came out. So it was, I think it was like 5 days before they made their notice. And they made it public, and then 5 days later, they had their first hearing. They had 15 hearings all across the islands, on every island, Oahu, Maui, Hawaii, Molokai, Lanai, Kauai. So they had hearings on each island, and like Oahu, they had more than one hearing. And there were...
And I just got to say, I'm going to put my two cents in. I love to hear smart Hawaiians talking straight up truth kind.
Hundreds of people. So that's 15, if you think about that. At least 100 at each meeting. The vast majority of them were opposed to any kind of rulemaking for federal recognition. And all those voices went unheard, supposedly. They were transcribed. They were put in the record. But when the DOI came out with their proposed rule in October 2015, they cited written comments, over 5,000 written comments, saying that the majority of these written comments were in support of drafting a rule for federal recognition with the Native Hawaiian community.
And again, just a little two cents, BS from DOI.
So that was a travesty in itself right there.
I think so. But, you know, if you go back to early June 2014, suddenly there's an announcement. The DOI is coming to Hawaii. There was no education. There was no preparation. Then a little email came out. There's a 19-page document in the Federal Register. You better read if you're going to be making testimony.
Right.
19 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Then when the document was came out posting for the notice where the meetings were going to be, all it said was that there were going to be public hearings where they would receive testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So hundreds of people came out, but later they said that they were only going to keep written testimony.
Mm-hmm.
They never informed people at the time that they had scheduled the hearings that their testimony would be discarded and thrown out. But I think what was the most interesting thing to me was that we had the Akaka bill.
Mm-hmm.
It had been languishing for 12 years mm-hmm. in the Congress. The rulemaking DOI process came out. It didn't really actually relate to at least 11 years of the Akaka bill. But what they proposed when they came out was that we could have a Hawaiian nation as long as we would give up being Hawaiian and say that we were Indians. And I think that that was absolutely the wrong approach in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
but it's the wrong approach with indigenous peoples. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you tried that with people that were not indigenous, mm-hmm. you know, we'll give you these rights of self-determination if you'll say that you're not Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not going to fly in China, mm-hmm. you know, any more than being an Indian was going to fly here. But the question that Hawaiians were asking at that time was who initiated this process and why? And mm-hmm. it was very clear it didn't come from the Hawaiian people.
No.
No one in the state knew anything about it. It came right down to a handful of people, including Robin Danner
mm-hmm.
and others who were intimately involved and later politically appointed to the Kana'i Olawalu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was the same people.
So I think, well, it's pretty common knowledge now that in March 2014, OHA took a group down there. Mm-hmm. down to Washington, D.C., and they were down there to lobby the Department of Interior.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, and then in June of that same year, they came out with the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there was also some, there was also, you know, speculation about how close Robin Danner and Jade Danner were in terms of lobbying the Department of Interior. I heard Jade was very key in lobbying the Department.
Hey, and I'm just going to put this out. I just put this up because it said First Friday episode, DOI and Aupuni and Federal Recognition. I did not play it because they're going over the Danner sisters, okay? Okay, I didn't do that, didn't. This is the first time I'm hearing and seeing it. Okay, just want to put that out there, okay?
Department of Interior
mm-hmm.
To propose these rules. So it didn't really, it didn't actually, we know it didn't come from the community, that it actually came from a handful of people. And we know that the Danners have been lobbyists for corporations like Arctic Power. You know, their interest lies with corporations and not with the people, really. And
I think this is really how Robin Danner got her background. She started out as an indigenous voice supporting the Alaska pipeline. And she had a very good relationship with Dan Inouye and also Ted Stevens up there from Alaska. But it's interesting that you point out Robin's involvement with the Department of Interior, because we need to remember that at this time there was an investigation that was called for within the Department of Interior. It involved special contractual favors being pursued for Robin Danner and the CNHA. And this occurred within Interior, but it was not in the Indian side of Interior. It was the Trust Territory Interior Deputy, Mr. Balbata, who was reported by his own staff playing favoritism games. CNHA was in there with Robin trying to get some sole source contracts. It did not happen. The solicitor's office stepped in. Mr. Balbata was made to eventually leave office.
Mm-hmm.
He had to step out, and then when the investigation was ended, he left the administration. Perhaps this is something we need to take up with the new president, but I believe when I look at the history of it, it's pretty clear it came from the Office of Hawaiian Relations,
yep.
Kimo Kiloi,
mm-hmm.
private meetings with Robin and a few others, and then he put it into the Federal Register without really having the approval of Interior itself. It was something that happened in a roundabout way without all of Interior knowing, but it's something that I think we need to have the new president look at. We've been months under the Obama administration without a solicitor to investigate what's going on in Interior. Maybe this is the time. Hey, Lenny, you were working on a report, looking at some statistics, and you were on your way up to Washington, D.C., and I was wondering if you could tell us what occurred up there in Washington, why you went, and were you able to go to Interior and talk with them about the process and some of the concerns?
Yeah, so basically, myself, Lainey Hale, Joanna Howard, Nani Ome, and Kiana Marshall, we've been researching the comments because we wanted to look at, read the comments and actually see what they really said. And when we looked at the 2014 comments, and the question was, should we propose rules to reestablish a nation-to-nation relationship with the Native Hawaiian community, there was about 5,164 comments submitted. That's less than 1% of the total Hawaiian population or Kanaka Maoli population. And 741 of them, we found, were actually submitted from the Native Hawaiian Role Commission, which was created out of Act 195 in 2011 and whose sole purpose was to create a Hawaiian role and not to lobby the Department of Interior for federal recognition on behalf of Native Hawaiians. So we found that very concerning, and it, most of those testimonies were unsigned. And then we also found of that 5,000 comments, 1,831 of them were from Imua Hawaii, which is an organization that is comprised of Native Hawaiian Role Commissioner relatives, Jay Danner, the sister of Robin Danner, the commissioner, Lili Kala Kamele Hiva, the mother of Na'alehu Anthony, and some other well-connected Native Hawaiians in, out there in the community who always side with the state of Hawaii in terms of Hawaiian issues. So we found that as well.
And that wasn't before. Lili Kala was a very strong person. I worked with her in Kalahui. It looked like she has change sides.
And these were postcards. And then we also found 1,021 duplicate testimonies of that 1,800. 1,000 of them were exact duplicates, same names, same testimonies, everything is submitted. So when you count the Imua Hawaii testimonies alone, these postcards now, just postcards, there are 55% of the total testimony of 5,000. So does that really represent the Native Hawaiian voice? And that was really our concern when we saw these comments, when we were researching. And besides that, there were other concerns as well. But those are the main ones. And then in the 2015 comments, there were 54,000 total comments submitted. And 50,000 of them, 50,535 of them were submitted after the December 30th deadline. And actually lots of the comments were submitted after the December 30th deadline. And they were submitted on behalf of some anonymous person who said it was a change.org petition with names of Hawaiians that are leaders in the community who had no idea how their name got on there. And it was actually a fake change.org petition. So that was a huge concern with this because 50,000 names on there, and they're counting these 50,000 names. With, and these names were put on there without permission.
How did you find out it was a fraudulent change.org petition?
Researchers. We had people actually went and researched. We contacted change.org. We contacted the Department of Interior. Of course, we didn't get a response about that. And we went through the list as well, and we contacted people that we knew that were on the list. All of them said they were not, they had no idea how their name got on there.
But it was interesting, even the language of the petition, it wouldn't seem to be supportive of federal recognition, right? Wasn't it more like...
It was very vague.
Yeah.
And the way, and from my communication, what very little communication I get back from the Department of Interior, is that they're not going to really, they don't have some kind of set rubric where they say, okay, if this testimony says this and this, we'll count it as for the rule or against it. It's very vague how they perceive testimonies, how they claim not to count testimonies. And so we were worried that it could be counted against us. And so that was a huge concern as well. So what we did was we wrote up a report and we wanted to submit it straight to the Department of Interior and went to Washington, D.C. with this report along with some information, facts,
and petitions that hundreds of Hawaiians have signed that saying basically we reject this process, the Na'iapuni process, and that we do not want federal recognition, and we totally oppose those proposed rules. Mm. And for, you know, reasons I'm sure we're going to go over later. But, and we went up to, I went up to Washington, D.C., tried to get into the Department of Interior, emailed them, called them, got no response until the very day I was supposed to meet, you know, I went there and they knew I was coming, basically. I posted it on Facebook, you know. I called them, emailed them. For 4 months, I didn't get any response. And finally got a response saying that they're not going to meet with anyone until they've reviewed all the comments. And so I went there, I had someone filming me. I was live streaming the whole thing, shared the documents I was going to submit to the Department of Interior, got into the lobby. They told us to turn the video off, that we can't video, we can't take pictures in the lobby, and I cannot even submit my paperwork. Mm-hmm. So it took a lot of, you know, going back and forth with the security that was there. They knew we were coming.
And this is not China, Russia. This is the United States. Okay. I'm going to stop right there. We have to do the half an hour stuff. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei Kiikuia Kilauea. This is Nale Hawaiian Issues. And we're listening to First Friday from this past April, a couple months back, with Mililani Trask. And she discusses with Helani Sonata Pale and Lehua Kinilau Kano. And they're discussing the U.S. Department of Interior's pending decision regarding federal recognition, Na'iapuni, and the Fed works process in general. But right now, let's go see about the ocean safety, what's happening.
Aloha, I'm Pat Durkin with your KKCR Beach and Ocean Safety Tip for today. The safest places to swim are at beaches with lifeguards. On Kauai, we have 7 lifeguard stations. On the North Shore, they are located at Haena Beach Park and the Hanalei Pavilion. On the east side, lifeguards are at Kailia Beach Park and Lydgate Park. South to west side locations are Poipu Beach Park, Salt Pond Park, and Kekaha Beach Park. These stations are staffed 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Always check in with lifeguards no matter where you plan to swim. Conditions can change rapidly. For more information about today's visit KauaiExplorer.com. With today's Beach and Ocean Safety Tip, I'm Pat Durkin for KKCR Radio. Have fun and be safe.
And it looks like everything's pretty low, except for there's a high surf advisory on the east side. So you're looking from like, you know, around Kilauea, Anahola, down to Lihue side. So you gotta be careful of the high surf. So in that area, you're talking about like from 3 to 7 variable. Hanalei side, Poipu side over there, down to about like 1 to 3, 1 to 4. So just mostly on the east side. Lihue, around Kapa'a side, maybe a little bit up towards, Anahola, a little bit past. High surf advisor over there. So, just be careful on that stuff. Again, we're continuing on with the discussion with, Mililani Trask, with Helani Sonata Pale and Lehua Kinilau Kano on First Friday from April regarding, Department of Interior and federal recognition and Na'iapuni and all that stuff. Yeah, we get that set up again right here. There you go.
We can't take pictures in the lobby, and I cannot even submit my paperwork. Mm-hmm. So it took a lot of, you know, going back and forth with the security that was there. They knew we were coming. I tried to call people down to meet me and to collect the documents, and finally got an attorney to come down to collect the documents and sign off on them. But it took a while, and we weren't treated very well in there. So it's not a very welcoming place. It's not a place where I believe that Hawaiians could actually get their concerns heard. Mm-hmm. Because it is, you know, first of all, it's in Washington, D.C., heavily secured. You can't even take pictures. I can't even interview employees, I was told, of the Department of Interior.
You know, is there a place where the report that you wrote, the statistics that you find, is posted on the internet so that readers and others can see what is in the report?
Sure. Everything's posted on protest.naialpuni.com, and we have articles, we have information, we have facts, statistics, and it's basically what we're trying to do is share the information with the community, do what OHA didn't do from the very beginning, and is basically they haven't done any kind of education in the community, and that's what we're trying to do is do education in the community. My visit to the Department of Interior was an eye-opening because I realized that we're going to be in an even worse position if we become federally recognized. Imagine having to fly to Washington, D.C. to get your concerns heard and then not even being sure if you're going to even get an appointment or get to see anyone in there.
You know, one of the things that we had been talking about was this issue of self-determination, that it is a right of peoples. It's not a right of government. It's not a right of state agencies or federal agencies, but of peoples. Mm-hmm. But when you go back to where this effort begins, after the Akaka Bill is, if we could say that it was POW, I think it's sort of morphed into this little monster, but it begins back in 2011, with the passage of 195, and that occurred in the state legislature.
Yes, it did.
You know, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit, Lehu, about what happened with Kona'i Olovalu, who really ran it, how those people were designated, and what their job was in terms of their actual mandate that they had.
Well, in 2011 is when the bill was introduced, and it was introduced. The bill is really Brookwood Galutaria, Senator Galutaria's bill, and I think the other signatories were like Clayton He. It actually might be Senator He's bill, but I know it was He, Galutaria, Kahele, and Pohai Ryan were the Senate proponents on that bill. And so they were the main ones pushing, but really it was Malama Solomon. At the time, Bruce Kepler was a staffer working for Malama Solomon, long time with the civic clubs and pro-federal recognition. And so knowing that things were stalled in Congress, the thought at the time was that if a role was at least established here at the state level, that the federal government could somehow, it would get the process going. Basically, mm-hmm. That was the whole idea behind it. So it allowed for state recognition and the creation of this role. That bill came over to the House at the time. Representative Hanohano was chair of Hawaiian Affairs.
Yes.
And so she gutted the bill, anything to do with the role. And she just said that, you know, Native Hawaiians are the indigenous peoples of the state of Hawaii. Very short. If you look at the House version of the bill, that's all it said. Then they go into conference and they go back and forth. And this is where I really saw Malama was just adamant about wanting to have a role and wanting to have the process started and feeling like we've been talking about this for so many years and adamant that she wanted OHA involved in it through the funding. And there was a provision in there about DHHL that I was actually really fighting to get out of the bill. I was saying it didn't belong there. There was a lot of concern. Actually, Colleen Hanabuso was a congressperson at the time, and she too had some concerns about that language in the bill that basically said that, you know, any amendments to the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act would be authorized or approved. And again, what about the voice of the Native Hawaiian beneficiary? So this is all happening in conference. And ultimately, all of that language was left in because the feeling was like they wanted OHA and they wanted DHHL to be a part and to be included in this whole process.
And I think the thing is that people, when you look at what the media is saying, and it's very interesting because the Civil Beat, for instance, has taken the editorial position that they're going to support it. The Advertiser, mm-hmm. All the big media groups that got thousands of dollars of trust funds to run informational ads, mm-hmm. all came out with editorials supporting it. But when you look at it, it was a state legislative measure.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of it was to create a list uh-huh. of Hawaiians who would eventually become voters.
Mm-hmm.
But the bill was clear that they needed to have 200,000 registered Hawaiians on that list. Mm-hmm. That was a little bit less than two-thirds of the number of Hawaiians in the state. Mm-hmm. The bill also said that Kana'i Olawalu was to be administratively attached to OHA. So that OHA wound up paying for it with mm-hmm. our trust money. Mm-hmm. But the other thing was is that by attaching it to OHA, it made the entire process continue as a state process, which eventually the U.S. Supreme Court sees and says, this isn't a bona fide Hawaiian effort. This is going to go to the Ninth Circuit.
Well, and that's where I think the people just continue to misunderstand. Whenever we talk about F-195 and Kana'i Olawalu, and, you know, I've heard, you know, Robin Danner say, well, it's just a roll. It's just like, you know, like a census. You're just taking account of Hawaiians. It doesn't, you know, so why is there this equal protection challenge? But clearly in the bill, if you read it, it defines a qualified Native Hawaiian. If you're defining a Native Hawaiian and you're excluding this process to just Hawaiians, hello, we're back to Rice versus Cayetano again mm-hmm. and that whole equal protection challenge. So I saw the process is problematic to begin with. So 2011 happens. They're claiming they're going to register hundreds of thousands of people. They utterly fail. I mean, the reports, as we've saw in the media, is like 19,000 after 2 years. People mm-hmm. just don't respond to
After 2 years and $4+ million.
Right.
Millions of dollars were spent. Now we see that in reality, about 19,000 were enrolled. But Lehua, they came out with all kind of press statements. They had 90,000. Where did all those figures come from?
Well, and that's the frustrating part is that, so because they couldn't get the numbers, what they do in 2013, Senator He at the time, there was a bill that had nothing to do, you had to have been paying attention. It had nothing to do with the role or Kana'i Olawalu. It had to do with public documents. And what Clayton He did in the Senate Judiciary and Neighbor, because he was the chair of that committee, is he gutted that bill and he put in language that in essence put these other roles, the Kawinoa role, the OHA registry, which, you know, people would sign on for scholarships and for other unrelated, nothing to do with sovereignty or nation building. And all of these names were automatically added on. And I thought Kekoa Aki, Quinones Aki, and Noe Arista did an awesome article because they said there were people on that list who pre-deceased 2011,
yes.
and they were all added onto the roll automatically.
Mm-hmm. Is this information in your report?
We actually submitted testimony to that.
You know,
well.
I think it would be a good idea to pull some of that out. I mean, right here in our own
That's
First Friday
idea.
Studio, one of our cameramen, Scotty, encountered this very same problem with his mother. Mm-hmm. We know now that on the list there are people who are dead. Mm-hmm. Thousands, 80,000, 90,000 names were added from other lists that they gathered, many of which didn't have anything to do with this. But I'm thinking that this is the kind of thing that should be documented and perhaps turned over to the United States Civil Rights Commission, because it appears that there was a huge effort to make it look like there was a state law being implemented. In reality, millions of state trust dollars were paid out. And in the end, not only was the role doctored to make it appear that it was something it wasn't, but in the very end, the role that was supposed to be used for the Hawaiian voters was thrown out, along with the Hawaiians themselves. There was never any election.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see if we could move forward now. We've looked at the Kana'i Olawalu. Mm-hmm. Then we have this creation of Na'i Aupuni. Once again, OHA mm-hmm. hires the attorney, Bill Mehe'ula. Why, mm-hmm. the same attorney that went to get the appraisal mm-hmm. for the Kaka'ako land.
Mm-hmm.
And a nonprofit allegedly is created.
Uh-huh.
But they continue to be funded by the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. Then an AHA was called.
Mm-hmm.
What happened at the AHA?
Well, first, they didn't have any cameras. They were supposed to elect first, right? And then they
That's
threw
right.
out the elections, like you said. And then they said, well, all of you that ran as candidates, you can now automatically participate in this AHA.
But, you know, we had the rule.
Mm-hmm.
they were going to have an election.
Mm-hmm.
How many people were going to be in the election? Was it the 80,000, 95,000 with the added list, or was it just the 19,000 that they actually did enroll when the truth came out? Who was actually supposed to be voting in the election that never happened?
My understanding, it was the larger list, because the candidates who were participating in the process did receive lists so they could make contact and ask for people to vote for them before the election was shelved, as we all know, and people were just unelected and allowed to participate in this. Yeah. In this AHA.
So I think they ended up with like 121,000 people on that list after they transferred the other list over. And then they certified 95,000. But when they sent the ballots out, they still sent it out to people who were deceased.
Mm.
And some people even got more than one ballot. There were problems with the ballots. They had people who were on there twice, people who weren't on there at all.
Yeah.
They had people who were, the ballots were supposed to be alphabetized. And there were, I guess, like Leahy Kihoi was the first one on one of the ballots, the Big Island ballot. And there was a huge scandal with that. So the whole process is was problematic.
The first name on the ballot the ballots are usually alphabetical.
Yeah.
But there was some tamperings to make sure that the Kana'i Olovalu commissioners, regardless of whether their name started with A or B, were going to be at the top, you know. We've moved from Kana'i Olovalu. They got $4 million plus. There was actually a public vote. The trustees said, we're not going to fund them anymore. And after that, I think they continued to get over $1 million. But when it came to Na'i Aupuni, how much money did they get?
$2.6 million. And so after the June hearings, the DOI hearings, 2014, December 2014, Na'i Aupuni was created. They aren't really a nonprofit. They're actually not registered as a 401c3. So they're not really a nonprofit. And they have another organization, a nonprofit that actually receives the money, is like their fiscal sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And they were appointed by OHA. I mean, we don't even know the people
The commissioners were appointed by Neil Abercrombie. And the Na'i Aupuni people were appointed by OHA. But,
if you talk
with the trustees of OHA, you're going to find that there are several trustees who had no idea what was going on, who had no idea how those folks got designated. Of course, when you look at who's there, it seems many of the old guard were included in the Na'i Aupuni effort. But they got an additional $2.6 million for what they were supposed to do. But you're right. The list of the Hawaiian beneficiaries was totally thrown out. The election process was then challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And because it appeared to be unconstitutional and they were set for trial, they decided to get rid of the election. And then they called for a constitutional convention. The people that went, who were they? Who were they? How did they get in?
Unelected. And they were on the Kana'i Olovalu rolls. They supposedly had 10 people who, you know, recommended them. Some of them didn't even have the 10 people. And some of them actually put the same person 10 times. So it wasn't, they didn't even represent 10 people, some of them. They were unelected. 154 of them ended up 151 at the first day, which was February 1st. They convened at the Royal Hawaiian Golf Course. And it was supposed to be 20 days of basically writing a constitution and being educated. And I remember when going to a lot of these community meetings that Bill spoke at, and Bill always said, Bill Mehe'ula, the attorney for Na'i Aupuni, that it was a process that was for the people and that the participants will decide what they want to do. They'll make their own schedule. We don't know what they're going to do. They could push for independence, blah, blah, blah. And then the next thing you know, there's a whole week-long schedule, pre-scheduled education week for these unelected candidates or delegates that Na'i Aupuni put together. So it was totally controlled by Na'i Aupuni. And then, you know, we have Ka'iolani Milham's articles, which came out on the Hawaii Independent Online News, And it really, it just shows, we've been saying from day one that this whole process is predetermined for federal recognition. They're preparing the Constitution to, for the DOI proposed rules and the final rules, yes, when they come out. And sure enough, when we hear back from Hawaiians that were in there that were pushing for independence, like Ka'iolani Milham, we find out that it was predetermined. We find out that they made, you know, they made the rules to benefit the federal recognition cause.
I think that there's, when you look at the process that was followed, millions spent with a false advertising campaign to make it look as though a real effort was being made to enlist the involvement of the Hawaiian people, that it was truly a democratic process. There was going to be an election, and there would be a constitutional convention. These things, this is how America was created. But in reality, none of those things occurred. The list was abandoned. But what did we actually get out of the AHA? You had brought some graphs for us to take a look at, mm-hmm, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about what these graphs are showing, because these are actually recorded votes. There were recorded votes, mm-hmm, at the AHA, which occurred at the gated golf course, surrounded by police.
Yeah. Heavy security. They searched bags. They searched the candidates' bags. They didn't allow anyone who was not a candidate in, supposedly, but then some people got in anyway. They were well-connected. So I was there the first day when they convened and was told where I could protest and blah, 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 can't go in. Walter Reedy was there the first day as well. He tried to get in, and he was dragged out by security and police. And he had that all on film as well. So it was really a process that was not transparent and excluded the vast majority of Hawaiians.
Mm-hmm. You know, not only were the, and Walter tried to get in, he had previously been a delegate, but when he gave it up, when he saw what was happening and he said, I can't participate, he wanted to observe as a kupuna. Yeah. They went to a golf course, not a Hawaiian community. It was gated. They brought in heavy security. Then they had these rules. No Hawaiian was allowed to enter. No kupuna was allowed to come and see. No Hawaiian was allowed to pray, to open in a tradition with a traditional prayer. They also elected a sergeant-at-arms. And then they decided the sergeant-at-arms needed a security force, so they brought in armed police. Mm-hmm. It was very, very much controlled by government and by these folks who were self-designated, really, and with many of them political connections all the way up to Washington. But when they got in there, they took a vote. They drafted a constitution, mm-hmm, and they took a vote, and it was interesting to see how many people actually participated in that vote. As you were saying, there were supposed to be 190, mm-hmm, but very, very few came, except for the last day of the vote.
Yeah.
All these people came for the first time so that they could vote. But how did what did the graphics show that you brought for us to take a look at here?
Okay, so basically what we found was there were 88 votes in favor of the Constitution, which is very much pro-federal recognition, is what they're probably going to propose to the Department of Interior.
So out of 577,000 Hawaiians,
yeah,
residing in the USA, there were none that participated in an election.
Yeah.
But 88
unelected delegates.
Unelected self-appointed delegates, mm-hmm, voted in support of it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at the graphics, the first graphic, Molokai and Lanai, there were two delegates. One delegate was opposed, one against. So it was 50% each way. And then next, when you look at Hawaii Island, there were 13 delegates, and 72% of them voted yes, 28% no. When you look at Kauai and Niihau, Eo Kauai, 100% of them, which was only two delegates, said no. The next graphic shows Maui delegates. 50% of the Maui delegates voted yes and 50 no for this pro-federal recognition constitution. And then what's very interesting, when you look at the graphics for the outside of Hawaii vote, so these are delegates from the continent, 86% of them voted yes and 14% of them voted no. And the yes votes were 19. So this is a lot of votes compared to the outer islands. And then if you go next to the Oahu votes, this is where the vast majority of the votes came from. 76% of the Oahu delegates voted yes, and 22% of them voted no. So when you add the outside of Hawaii votes and the Oahu votes, that is 70 votes, 70 out of 88 votes that were in favor of this constitution. That's the vast majority of the yes votes came from Oahu and outside of Hawaii.
So it kind of begs the question about who's making the decisions for things that impact us here.
Yes.
I mean, for yourself, Mililani, you're born and raised Hawaii Island. And so to think that those on Oahu and those out of Hawaii can make the decisions for your island and for all these other islands.
It's really outrageous. But, you know, when you think about it as well, a state law was passed by a state legislature saying register 2/3 of the Hawaiians in this state. Millions were spent by Robin Danner and all the commissioners flying back and forth across the U.S., many trips to interior up in Washington, D.C. They didn't deliver the vote, but nevertheless, this kind of crippling process goes forward. You know, Lehua, when we get down to the next step, because they're talking now about another nonprofit being created, they're trying to raise funds for a ratification. You know, what advice do we have for Hawaiians with regards to participating in this, and what's really at risk in ratifying?
Well, they at least understand that trying to get OHA to fund it could potentially bring the equal protection challenge, because again, we're limiting the vote to just Hawaiians.
Yeah.
That was the decision that came out of their OHA. So they formed the ainalahui.com, and they're encouraging people to donate funds. They've already raised $70,000, primarily large donations, but they're trying to get the smaller donations as well. And then ultimately, when you look at and connect the why we talked about DOI and Na'ialpuni on this show, when you connect them, the ratification of this constitution is the key component.
It is.
And so it's critical. I know for us on the show, Mililani, Helani, myself, we oppose this process from day one. We are all not on the Kana'i Oluwalu roll because we object to this whole process, and that is a state-created process. You know, we've always talked about self-determination is a right of peoples. It's not governments. Governments shouldn't be involved in this process, and you yourself have advocated for years in international...
Yeah, this is not self-determination at all. This is government determination.
Absolutely. So the concern is that there's going to be this ratification vote. Who's going to be allowed to vote? If it's limited to that Kana'i Oluwalu role, we're all excluded, clearly, because we chose not to participate. Now, you know, I would continue, as we have, to advocate to our community to boycott this process. Now, people say, well, if we boycott and we don't participate, then we let the 88, you know, make the decision for all of us. I hear that. But I think it makes a statement when so many decide not to participate in the process, because even the DOI has number triggers that they need to hit to reach certain numbers. So I continue to say we need to oppose. I know there are others, Moani Akaka, for example, who participate in the AHA, who is out there encouraging people to vote no. If you are on the roll, I still would encourage you not to vote. But if you feel you have to vote, then please register a no vote. But again, I would still, first of all, call for the boycott, because we cannot support a process that, again, is all about the government and a top-down approach and not really of our peoples.
And, you know, why was this entire... why was this entire manipulative process put in place? Well, it's easy to see. If you take a look at the Department of Interior memorandums and the question and answer sheet, there's the answer. Will the new Hawaiian nation have land? Answer, no. The new Hawaiian nation is not allowed to have land, but they will be able to get the bombing target of Koho'olawe, where no one lives, which is still littered with live ordnance. Will the Hawaiian nation have powers similar to the Indian nations, powers to build schools, pursue education, housing? The answer is no. The Hawaiian nation has no power. And when you read the Federal Register, why are they pushing this? So that people can get money from Congress. So creating a nation that is economically self-sufficient is not the goal. The goal is to facilitate those who have been receiving from Danny Noy and others. Mm-hmm. They want to continue to suck at the federal tit now that the senator is gone, and that's what this is about. Also, no claims allowed. So no reparations, no claims for the overthrow of the Hawaiian government. What are we going to do in terms of the presidential election? Because right now, over this issue, both candidates, or at least the Democratic candidates, have taken position. What do you think about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton coming in on this issue?
Well, Hillary Clinton obviously just rubber-stamped this whole AHA process and the Constitution. And again, that's part of the administration's position, right? Let's just let the Hawaiians have nothing, and we keep all the resources as the state and the federal government. Bernie Sanders had an interesting position about saying about he's, you know, willing to work with Hawaiians to achieve energy independence, protecting the environment, but specifically on Native Hawaiian issues. He said some, you know, he acknowledged the wrong that had occurred, and so, you know, I hate to put too much hope in that, and I know you made a statement on Facebook about, you know.
Yeah, my manao is, I mean, I think Bernie Sanders is the better candidate. He's not owned by a corporation, basically, and that's the fear. But we can't put all our hopes into the presidential candidate, you know. I mean, we got to do it ourselves. We got to be out there and educate our own, you know, and be out there and advocate for our own.
And with that, we're coming at the top of the hour. That was with the first Friday from April of this year. It's 2 months ago. Milani Trask discussing with Hialani Sonata Pale and Lehua Kinilau Kano. Three very smart women and very factual. And I'm going to probably play that again because I think it really, really puts it, and it's only 2 months ago, it really puts it in perspective on what happened, who did it, and why, and that this effort by the DUI is not the Hawaiian community. And with that, I am going to play While America Sleeps, celebrates, I mean, at the top of the hour, and I'll have a few minutes to still do the top of the hour stuff. Tell you what. We'll start in the mix, but right after this song, the Hawaii National Anthem of the Nation of Hawaii, penned by our King David Kalakaua. Our national anthem of our country of Hawaii.